Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go at a minute past the hour on this Tuesday, the 24th day of March, 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you're welcome to pop by, pick yourself out a nickname, a handle, and a password. Jump into the chat room and join in the raucous, raring-to-go, real-time multimedia experience that is The Horn chat room. Good evening, News Ninja Carol Baker. Good evening, Gerald. Good evening, Jug of Punch and Labor Man and Y.O. Stan Mike. Also, good evening, of course, to longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator and third stage guild navigator, Sparky, who has folded space and is both Sparky and Man Cave this evening. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Titanic Tuesday, you may recall, being dedicated to those manifestations of Titanic intellect. Intellect that is about to hit, you know, a devastating, irresistible force or immovable object of the sort that we see coming from the right wing ever so often. You might recall that it was our buddy Jim who helped create Titanic Tuesday way back when he told the story of tuning into the 962nd tier right-wing talker over in Beckley, West Virginia, who, taking a call from one of his knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, knuckle-breathing, mouth-walking faithful, received the question, Steve, how come it is you reckon there are seashells in the rocks of West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the beach. To which he replied, well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Yeah, no word yet on the movement of the Titanic poached egg cups. No. So we celebrate right wing wisdom on Titanic Tuesday, and this evening is no different. Thank you, Jeremy, loud and clear on TuneIn. Thank you very kindly. A little program announcement. There will be I'm still not going to give it away, but I'm tickled pink, and I hope it all works out. That's the thing. It seems like every time I promote an interview, something goes sideways, but I'm sincerely hoping that it does not. I've got a conversation scheduled for the beginning of the program tomorrow that is absolutely going to be a treat for me, and I hope a treat for you. Historic, a legend. And not a political legend. No. Not educational, political. No, this is a big deal. So tomorrow, at about this time, we will be beginning a conversation I'm stoked. We'll just say that. So I hope you'll join in. I hope you'll join in long about, the beginning of airtime tomorrow. And it will supersede prayer meeting Wednesday to a certain extent. So just saying. And I'm really, this is going to be so cool. You don't hear me get excited like that very often, do you? No. Let's see. Thanks going out to Henry for getting us started on fundraising this evening. You know, we got a little bit ahead thanks to Bob last night, and thanks to Tracy, and thanks to Darlene and Gerald and Ron. We got a little bit ahead last night, and we're trying to stay that way, and Henry got us started earlier this evening. Henry did have an hour on me. Not have a show on me, but have an hour on me. And that is wonderful news, because I had a note earlier today. Thank you, Henry. Had a note earlier today from Johannes Coloradosensis. I am Robertus, and he is Johannes, and we communicate in sort of bastardized Latin. But I had a note from Johannes of Coloradosensis noting, here's a contingency challenge for the head-on commune community, the Horn. John says, I will contribute a program's worth of funding, $150, on the condition that the amount be met by actual received contributions before the end of this week. If you verify that the amount has been matched as of the end of the broadcast on March 27th, I will send yet another Benjamin and a half to Bossman Wayne's spider-infested mailbox before the finish of the God of War's 12th part of the year expires. Got that? Yeah. So this is not just double, this is a triple year contribution. So we are one third of the way toward meeting that this evening already. So if we can raise another $100, Johannes Coloradosensis, John in Colorado, will kind of triple that. So can we do that? 10 at 10, 5 at 20, 20 at 5, 2 at 50, 3 at $33.33. Any way you want to do it, either way you want to do it, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com, and this represents an awesome opportunity to stay out in front and actually get us completely caught up as we roll downhill toward the end of March, this being the last full week of the month named for the Roman god of war. See? Yeah, there are 7 days remaining in the month. March will come to a close exactly a week from today. So can we do that? I sure hope we can. It is Titanic Tuesday, and oh my God, do we have some beautiful exemplars. Jim, with a poignant note, he says, when I'm gone and you're on the air, I guess the source of Titanic Tuesday will perhaps remain. Well, the source of Titanic Tuesday must remain. It is an integral part of the calendar, of the broadcast week, Jim. And many happy returns, by the way. Now, for this Titanic Tuesday, just a little observation before we get into the real... Whoops, get it, don't mind me, you know, get the blowgun, the darts and the net stuff, and there's an abundance of it. Just a little observation. And this isn't really Titanic-y, but still, it kind of, I heard it, saw it, and just felt I had a burden upon my heart, brethren and sistren, to deliver this unto ye. No. President Obama had a news conference today, and I'm sure that far and wide right-wingers are having kittens with crocheted tails and purple polka-dotted butts over it, because, well, if Barack Obama wakes up in the morning, they have a conniption and kittens with crocheted tail and purple polka-dotted butts, right? Yeah. But that having been said, President Obama had a news conference today in which he discussed a number of issues, not the least of which is the rather depressing reality that we will apparently be staying in, Afghanistan for another year. I saw rumblings of this in the New York Times a couple of days ago, but it was confirmed today. The Prime Minister or President or whatever he is of Afghanistan who is not Hamid Karzai, Hamid Karzai having robbed his way to fun and profit, has exited that office. The new president of Afghanistan showed up at the White House, and they had a little meeting, and he asked, apparently very nicely, he is, after all, Ivy League educated, right? No, he really is. Asked very nicely if we could pretty please keep the 9,800 members of the United States Armed Forces in Afghanistan through the end of the year before we bid them a fond farewell forever. And right. And apparently, like party guests who will not freaking leave and become a complete nuisance at the end of the evening, the generals don't want to leave either. But we're having such a lovely time blowing crap up. And what will our little pimply-faced drone pilots have to do if they can't hellfire missile Afghan wedding parties? Because we do that, you know. So, President Not Sure said, "Well, I would hate to leave you in a lurch. So, okay, we'll keep the troops there for another year. Hopefully, the Taliban will come to their senses and begin to behave very nicely, and they won't completely overrun you when we do leave, which we've known they were going to do all along, but we're going to pretend that they won't." Right? Yeah. So we're going to stay. But interestingly, I heard something from a foreign leader that I don't recall hearing any time in the recent past. And it provides an interesting juxtaposition, really. In his remarks, in the wake of the meetings, the new Afghan president, whose name is Ashraf Ghani, by the way. Ashraf Ghani, they had a joint press conference, and Ashraf Ghani said something I have not lately heard. He said, "I want to thank the United States for keeping its troops in my country." And obviously he has a vested interest in having the, because those 9,800 troops are what are keeping President Ashraf Ghani's neck affixed to Ashraf Ghani's shoulders and head. Because if he doesn't get out ahead of the Taliban when we finally do leave, there will be no more Ashraf Ghani. After President Obama had said, "Afghanistan remains a very dangerous place," based on President Ghani's request for flexibility in the U.S. drawdown timeline, the U.S. will maintain its current posture of 9,800 troops through the end of 2015. This flexibility reflects the reinvigorated partnership with Afghanistan, which is aimed at making Afghanistan secure and preventing it from being used to launch terrorist attacks. Okay. I mean, we all know this is... And absolutely, Marty via email noting, you know, the 34th Ferengi rule of acquisition, war is good for business. Yeah. But still, there was a moment there. President Ashraf Ghani announced thanks to the United States for keeping its troops there, but he took it one step further. And not that I'm some sort of political naif, but it meant something to me what President Ashraf Ghani said. He actually said, I want to thank the United States for keeping its troops there, and I want to thank the American taxpayers. And I thought that was rather a watershed moment, don't you? It's not, hell, It's seldom ever that we even get a general or an admiral or a field marshal or whatever to admit that there's a little bit of a debt owed to the American taxpayer. God knows the majority of the Congress thinks that they owed a debt to the defense contractors in the Pentagon. I know it was captured on video, and I hope it's preserved. I would like it a lot if, say, foreign leaders would show up once in a while who have been the beneficiaries of our largesse, even if it happens to be explosive largesse, if they would show up and say thank you once in a while. Also, in his news conference, President Obama made some passing references to the ongoing troubles with Israel. And they're not really troubles with Israel. They're troubles with the war criminal, Bibi Netanyahu, who really should be occupying a most uncomfortable cot somewhere in The Hague. In preparation for being tried for war crimes and crimes against humanity for what he has ordered be done to the innocent, little babies killed in their cribs in Gaza. Not to mention the West Bank. Yeah, but that ain't going to happen. But President Obama said, no, this is not something about a bad relationship between he and Bibi. No. He said it's a policy problem, because when Bibi said there will be no two-state solution under Bibi's rule, that was basically spitting on the declared foreign policy of the United States, to wit, a two-state solution, Palestinians and Israelis. And that now that he's been elected, Bibi walking it back and saying, well, I didn't mean what I said I meant. Now, that was the other Bibi who said that. That doesn't work. But in point of fact, the Israelis are undermining our attempt to hopefully at some point in time achieve peace in that region. Of course, it has been forever and a day since any Israeli prime minister has an Israeli prime minister ever thanked the American taxpayer? Now, I'm not saying, oh, we love America, blah, 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 we're your dearest friends, yada, yada, yada. And then, of course, massacring some sailors in 1968 aboard the USS Liberty, or shooting an American citizen in the head, or beating the hell out of an American citizen who's 15 years old in the West Bank. No, no, no. Have they ever said thank you to the American taxpayers for propping up their country since 1948? Yeah, I'm just asking. Because I got to thinking about it when President Ashraf Ghani of Afghanistan thanked the American taxpayer, and hopefully by extension the American moms and dads and brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and sons and daughters who have seen people, American citizens, not come home from Afghanistan. Well, I just got to thinking about it. Every single human being in the United States who has worked a job and paid taxes since 1948 has worked to prop up the state of Israel. Let that sink in. American citizens have lived and died, some without access to health care, many without access to health care, for themselves, to prop up the Israeli state. What do we get in return? Oh, I did. Thank you, Marty. You also left out running over an American citizen, Rachel Corrie, with a bulldozer. Sorry, Marty. Thank you for reminding me. What do we get for it? Well, we've gotten spied on. Our citizens have been killed. There is that whole USS Liberty thing. News Ninja Carol Baker pointing out, Beebe? Thank the American people? He's like the ungrateful child whose rent you pay, whose phone bill you pay, whose car payments you pay, who tells you what a shitty parent you are. Bingo! But after 67 years, isn't it time that we, 67 years, with not so much as a kiss my ass or a thank you. Well, okay, a lot of kiss my ass, not so much on the thank you. And a country that acts like we owe them those $3 billion a year when we don't. I think of my grandfather going in and out of a coal mine, breathing coal dust, trying to earn his bread and having his tax dollars go to support Israel. You know, some people are okay with it. Some people aren't. But every working American, be they Christian, Jew, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, atheist, we've all contributed to our own detriment. Yeah, Ron noting America is indeed exceptional. In this case, I think we're exceptionally stupid, but I think we figured some of that out, haven't we? But I was moved. I was moved when President Ashraf Ghani thanked the American taxpayer, because at least it seems he has some appreciation of the sacrifices that we have made for his country and continue to make. You know, of the 9,800 military service members who are over there now, some percentage of them aren't coming back to the United States. At least not alive. And so, you know, a little bit of gratitude goes a long way. But what do we, what does $3 billion buy us from the Israelis? Well, as has been reported in a number of media outlets, it has turned out, you know, we've got these talks going on, trying to keep the Middle East from turning into an even greater conflagration than it already is. And maybe the Titanic Tuesday nomination goes to We the People on this one. For being such suckers for so long. I mean, didn't Israel build the nuclear arsenal that it has and won't admit that it has on the backs of intelligence that they stole from us, that they spied from us? Jonathan Pollard, isn't he someone who spied on behalf of Israel on their dear friend, the United States? Well, guess what? It's happened again. Israel, it turns out, was spying on the closed door talks between the United States, France, Germany, Great Britain, and Iran. The Wall Street Journal broke the story. And it's all because Bibi Netanyahu, who is still walking the streets a free man instead of being indicted and waiting on trial on war crimes charges. I just have to bring that up a couple of times. You know, because he's a war criminal. It's all because Bibi Netanyahu said he wants to undermine the talks. You know, the talks in which their dear friends, the United States, are involved. With friends like these, you know? Now, how did we find out? Because we spied back. because they're such dear friends. We can't, you know, we can't trust them in a dark room. The Israelis are such dear, abiding friends of ours that we don't dare turn our backs on them for fear that our backs will begin to sprout shivs like mushrooms after a spring rain. Intercepting Israeli communications, the United States learned that... Well, let me just read the report from the International Business Times. Let me just read you this sentence and see what you get out of it. American officials discovered the breach when they spied on Israeli communications, which contained information about the deal that the officials believed could, and this is the part that we would click, you know, Control B, bold, that the officials believe could only have come from U.S. lawmakers briefed on the topic. So it turns out we've got an even bigger treason problem than we thought with the 47 senators. You know, the 47 traitors. Iran earlier said of the negotiations taking place, and there's a self-imposed deadline of March 31st to get something accomplished. Iran said, there will be no silly letter-writing campaigns over here. Iran speaks with one voice. Well, it used to be in the new United States of America that the United States spoke with one voice. Now we have from time to time spoken with one voice being enunciated by a forked tongue, but we spoke with one voice because the President of the United States, for so long as he has been white, has been allowed to conduct foreign policy. I mean, hell, Ronnie Reagan was allowed to go about the business of trading arms for hostages with the Iranians. The Israelis helped broker that one. They didn't spy on it. They were in the loop. The American people weren't, but the Israelis were. But for so long as he has been white, the President of the United States has been allowed to fulfill his constitutionally mandated duty of conducting foreign policy. But not that one in our White House. Oh, no, because he's a Kenyan Muslim usurper, right? Teabaggers? So it turns out that the Israelis spied on us and then used the results of their spying to try to turn members of the Congress of the United States against their own country. This, then, is our dear friend Israel. One anonymous U.S. Official said, it is one thing for the U.S. and Israel to spy on each other. It is another thing for Israel to steal U.S. secrets and play them back to U.S. legislators to undermine U.S. diplomacy. Another official said, people feel personally sold out. That's where the Israelis really better be careful, because a lot of these people will not only be around for this administration, but possibly the next one as well. Meanwhile, the Israelis are backpedaling as quickly as they can, having been caught with their hand in the till. Aaron Segui, who is a spokesman at the Israeli embassy in Washington, said, Ambassador Dermer never shared confidential intelligence information with members of Congress. His briefings did not include specific details from the negotiations. Oh, those lovely little adjectives. Specific details. which opens the door to the possibility that they damn sure did include details, including the length of the agreement or the number of centrifuges Iran would be able to keep. Now, here's the big laugher. This isn't hockey puck material, but you might just want to, put the side of your arm in your mouth or something to keep the laughing from annoying the neighbors. Some anonymous official from Bibi Netanyahu's office said, "These allegations are utterly false. The state of Israel does not conduct espionage against the United States or Israel's other allies."
Oh, yeah. Sure they don't.
Nah, they'd never do anything like that, even though they have. The false allegations are clearly intended to undermine the strong ties between the United States and Israel and the security and intelligence relationship we share. Who are you going to believe? Your own country or the spokesflack for a war criminal? Yeah. Irish Dave noting, isn't that always the way? It's always your friends that F you, since they're the ones you let get close enough to do that. All right. Tim from L.A. noting, speaking about saying thank you, wasn't it Bibi who said, "I think the choice of Iraq is a good choice. It's the right choice. If you take out Saddam's regime, I guarantee you that it will have enormous positive reverberations on the region." Okay. Now, some of those positive reverberations are, oh, look, ISIL. Yeah. Or, you know, Iraq in tatters, the Shia majority abusing the Sunni minority. Enormous positive reverberations. Of course, it has had positive. It has had positive reverberations. Bibi just didn't say for who, because it is always beneficial to the Israelis when Arabs are slaughtering other Arabs, because it keeps them busy. Tim from L.A. noting, you know, he never thanked the dead soldiers and their families, the dead soldiers who were killed in Iraq for his harebrained idea of attacking a sovereign nation. Also, is his name Bibi because that's the size of Netanyahu's brain? Or the teabaggers who support him because the neoconservative politicians say that the rapture will happen when Israel is finally attacked? Ooh, and the blood will run as high as a horse's teeth! One of these days, if I ever build that time machine, John of Patmos is sure enough getting crucified and he ain't writing that damn book. Irish Dave asking, but did the Mossad reveal the unlisted sex line number of Benghazi to select Repiglia Klansmen? That 1-900 lap dance is just for the little people. Yep, you never want to get too far away from the 34th Ferengi rule of acquisition. War is good for business. Oh, and some thanks to share out early on. Thank you to Glenn. Thank you very kindly and thank you to Thomas for getting us started on meeting Johannes Coloradosensis's challenge. With any luck at all, we will complete that by the close of the evening. And we are only $70 away, seven folks at $10 a piece, from having that be the reality. And thank you, Henry, for basically providing, saying, have this hour on him. So the next, well, with the 30 we've got and the 50 and the next 70 that comes in, it all gets tripled by Johannes Coloradosensis. Okay? Yay! And by the way, I didn't mention it, but should you wish to participate via the U.S. Postal Service, to wit, sending something to the spider-infested mailbox, that address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. With the gentle reminder that checks and money orders should be made payable to The Horn and not to Bob Kincaid, as I don't see him. And it makes life much simpler for Boss Van Wayne. Okie dokie, okie dokie. There has been a flurry of bill paying going on, and it will continue. We might, by the end of this month, there's a chance that we will just be current and not constantly playing catch up. And that's really exciting. But I had to share that just because it seemed like such a dichotomy. On the one hand, we've got our dear, dear friends spying on us and trying to undermine our own diplomacy with the aid, being afforded the aid and comfort of 47 traitors in the United States Senate and God knows how many other members of Congress. You know, John Boehner and such like, such as the Iraq. And then you've got the new president of Afghanistan, who, unlike just about any foreign leader ever anywhere, actually thanked not the United States, but the United States taxpayer. And, well, in many ways, the United States blood shedder. It's at least an interesting dichotomy. Do you suppose there will ever be a day when an American worker can wake up in the morning and know that, because you reckon we could have, with all the money we've given to Israel since 1948, you think we could have had universal health care by now? How far would that $3 billion a year go toward maybe feeding hungry Americans who right now are trying to exist on something between $1 and $3 a day? Yeah, I know. Oh, let's move along, though, because there's some other joyful news out there. This is a serious shift of gears, but, you know, late last night during the program, we were talking with our buddy Jay Cruzen, and he was talking about just ordinary life down there in Florida, Stan. Well, I take you now to a recording of a Florida State Senate Budget Subcommittee. And it was before that Florida State Senate Budget Subcommittee that the director of the Florida Division of Emergency Management, a man named Brian Kuhn, addressed the body about the need for funding to enhance and improve the warning system whereby the state provides as much advance information as possible to Floridians about things like floods, tornadoes, and, you know, hurricanes. Well, at one point, Brian Kuhn, who, being the director of the Florida Division of Emergency Management, operates within the executive department, or the executive branch of Florida state government, was questioned by a Democratic senator for the state of Florida by the name of Jeff Clemons. The exchange didn't get, I guess you'd call this hateful, but it did get humorous. One second here. They are all better now.
You were in D.C. Last time when we went through this particular issue, and as you said, these are federal funds. Are you familiar with the new procedures that FEMA issued just this week dealing with climate change and the fact that they're going to be requesting or demanding that states have a climate change plan?
That's two. Now, this is a senator for the state of Florida, so he gets to use that phrase.
Before they're going to issue some of these preparedness dollars?
I am.
Is that going to affect these monies at all?
It will not. Okay. That one refers to a state's hazard mitigation plan, which is done every 5 years. In the next iterations of them, will require to have language to that effect.
What were those words, Mr. Chairman? What were those words you were using?
I used climate change, but I'm suggesting that maybe as a state we use atmospheric reemployment. That might be something that the governor could get behind.
Oh, my God. Meanwhile, Director Brian Kuhn is just standing there at the podium with a grin on his face like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush, as the members of the Senate committee laugh openly at Florida Governor Rick Skeletor Scott. And, you know, these aren't any mild little titters or anything. No, no, no. These are guffaws.
That might be something that the governor could have heard. So, my worry, obviously, was with these dollars, but in a more general sense, that we as a state have to come up with some sort of plan in order to be able to make sure we keep our preparedness dollars for hurricanes. I'm assuming that is something that you are going to be speaking with the governor about and trying to take up so that we make sure we don't lose our dollars in the future.
Yes, Senator, and our next state mitigation plan.
Now, this ought to be interesting, right? Yeah. I mean, The punchline has already been, well, the punchline's already been delivered. How do you follow that?
In the future.
Yes, Senator, and our next state mitigation plan is due to the feds in 2018, so we have some time in which to have that conversation.
So even though that takes place, the edict starts kind of in March of 2016, we don't have to...
That's correct. But my understanding is at this point is it will require that future versions of our mitigation plan will be required to have language discussing that issue.
What issue is that?
Now, see, this is one of those moments when video would be worthwhile, because you need to see the grin on the face of Senator Jeff Clemons. There's not much left of the exchange, but this is precious.
Right, but my understanding is at this point is it will require that future versions of our mitigation plan will be required to have language discussing that issue.
What issue is that?
The issue that you mentioned earlier regarding...
I'm going to turn the chair back over. Well, maybe I shouldn't right now.
The chairman was rendered incapable of human communication because he was laughing so hard that he was about to barf up a lung. You know, because this, really, in the Stalinist state of Florida, you cannot say climate change, because they will can your ass if you say it, and you work at the will and pleasure of Governor Rick Skeletor Scott, the famously unindicted co-conspirator in a giant medical coverage indictment. The largest in the history of the United States, was it, Andy? I keep getting confused, but yeah. I mean, if you say climate change, if that had happened, because he only said it, what, twice? Would Al Gore have miraculously appeared inside that Senate hearing chamber? they weren't laughing. They weren't laughing because climate change is funny. It's terrifying. I noted today, because I go and I review, I read religiously, Charlie Pierce's blog over at Esquire.com. It turns out, and credit where credit is due, this is something Jim has been talking about for quite some time. It turns out that there's a problem, and it's not an imaginary problem, and it is no laughing matter. There's a problem with the Gulf Stream. Yeah. There is a peer-reviewed journal out there, Nature Climate Change, in which a group of scientists note that the amount of, and this is just, remember, Ted Theodore Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Raphael, says he follows the science. He just doesn't follow this science. This story coming out of the Independent of the UK. The Gulf Stream that helps keep Britain from freezing over in winter is slowing down faster now than at any time in the past millennium, according to a study suggesting that major changes are taking place to the ocean currents of the North Atlantic. Well, it's the North Atlantic. Who gives a shit? I mean, Florida's on the south, down in the South Atlantic, right? Scientists believe that the huge volumes of fresh water flowing into the North Atlantic from the rapidly melting ice cap of Greenland have slowed down the ocean engine that drives the Gulf Stream from the Caribbean towards Northwest Europe, bringing heat equivalent to the output of a million power plants. Calculations suggest that over the 20th century, the North Atlantic meridional overturning circulation, that's otherwise, you know, for Merca, for exceptional Americans, that means the northward flow of warm surface water and the southward flow of cold, deep water, has slowed between 15 and 20%. This, according to Stefan Rahmstorf of the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research in Germany. Professor Rahmstorf says there is more than a 9% probability. Well, that's just a problem. That's just a theory. That this slowdown is unique over the period we looked at since 900 A.D. Well, they ain't got no time machine. They wasn't there. How can they say anything about it? We conclude that the slowdown many have described is, in fact, already underway, and it is outside of any natural variation. According to the calculations performed by Professor Rahmstorf and his colleagues, about 8,000 cubic kilometers. Oh, F all, just try to imagine 8,000 cubic kilometers of something. 8,000 this way, 8,000 that way, 8,000 that. Whoa! That's 8 times 8 times 8. 64 times 8, I got that far. Kilometers, not yards, not meters, thousands of meters. 8 times 4 is, I got to know this, 8 times 4 is 32, 8 times 6 is 48. 512! That's 512 Jesus. 512,000 cubic meters of fresh water has flowed from Greenland into the Atlantic between 1900 and 1970. Oh, that's the easy part. Then we get into the Mayan numerology, because they love the number 13. From 1970 to 2000, it went up by 5,000 cubic kilometers to 13,000 cubic kilometers between in 30 years between 1970 and 2000.
Shit.
At what point in time? Going to take a little help here, I guess. This is a philosophic argument, a query, I suppose. At what point in time is there a number? Is there, as the saying goes, a magic bullet that will prove to these dead-from-the-neck-up Republicans, these godforsaken cokesuckers, these tea partiers, these tea baggers, these birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, booger-eaters, birchers, libertarians, republicans generally, is there anything that will prove to them beyond a shadow of a doubt, and does it have to be proof beyond a shadow of a doubt that climate change is effing real and the population of the entire planet is in grave goddamn danger? Anything. If there is, what the is it? Or are all these dumbasses just waiting around for some engineer, probably in India, to come up with the solution to it in the middle of the night on the back of a matchbook? Or for Jesus to show up? Or maybe the Israelis will steal the technology and give it to the and then we'll understand that it's real.
Professor Ramsdorf and colleagues point out that maps of global surface temperatures have consistently indicated an overall warming trend around the world. You know, those are actual temperatures that were taken. Even though Ted Theodore Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Raphael, doesn't believe in them because, you know, he's a man of faith, and if he doesn't believe in it, it isn't real. It's kind of the opposite of, you know, reality. Anyway, maps of global surface temperatures have consistently indicated an overall warming trend around the world except for the region of the North Atlantic south of Greenland. It is conspicuous that one specific area of the North Atlantic has been cooling in the past 100 years, while the rest of the world heats up. Now we have detected strong evidence that the global conveyor has indeed been weakening in the past 100 years, particularly since 1970. Hmm, he said, stroking his little chin whiskers. Hmm, he said. What could possibly correlate? What have we been doing as a species since 1900 that we have not been doing so much of in the previous 99,900 years of human existence on this little blue-green time machine marble hurtling through the universe? Well, maybe that's true, Jeremy. Jeremy noting that Sean Hannity, the Hannity job, Beckerhead, and Flush Flemball combined couldn't convince the knuckle-draggers of it. Not that they'd want to. They're being paid to convince them that it's right. Oh, okay. That amount of water? Thank you, Devin. It's always nice to have scale by which to compare things. That amount of water, those 13,000 cubic kilometers, Devin notes, that's a small planet. You know, a minor planet worth of water. Fresh, non-salty water entering the salt water of the global conveyor that is the Gulf Stream. The study used proxy measurements of the Atlantic currents using ice cores, tree rings, coral growth, and ocean and lake sediments to estimate regional temperature variations and so assess how the Gulf Stream has changed over the past 1,000 years. We'll see, they wasn't even taking its temperature. And then, in case anyone was wondering, there's Jason Box from the Geological Survey of Denmark and Greenland. I believe, is Jason Box the American scientist who had to leave the United States in order to be able to perform, to do science without being harassed by a bunch of birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, and the like? Is he that guy? Because he said that the melting ice caps create the, well, that you can link the slowdown to man-made climate change. A quote from Dr. Box. Now fresh water coming off the Greenland ice sheet is likely disturbing the circulation, so the human-caused mass loss of the Greenland ice sheet appears to be slowing down the Atlantic overturning, and this effect might increase if temperatures are allowed to rise further. And they laugh. Not without cause. They laugh. They laugh. In the Florida Senate.
I'm going to turn the chair back over.
Sounds like, but you know, the way climate change, maybe it's time we stop turning chairs over and maybe start turning a few pool tables over. Maybe wrecking the, no, wait, we're already wrecking the joint. What is it going to look like? This country, this world. And when is it going to start looking even weirder than it already does? How long before we start living Rapa Nui? But I'm sure there'll always be something to eat and someone to exploit for people like Ted Theodore Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Raphael. Devin noting, please get Guy McPherson on. Well, we'll see what we can make happen. Welcome to the 21st century. Indeed. And hey, thank you very kindly to Dan. We have only $50 now to go to meet Johannes Colorado Census's Triple Your Money Challenge. That is much appreciated, Dan. Thank you very kindly. So let's go ahead and take our little top of the hour break at the close of the filibuster. You, of course, are welcome to join in the conversation because this is, in fact, conversation radio. Ah, okay. Well, thank you, Marty. How's the world going to look? See Waterworld with Ted, son of Raphael, as the deacon. Yeah. Although, I don't... How many years is it going to take for us to start getting the Kevin Costner webbed feet, Marty? That's the question. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like I said, we'll close the filibuster here, take a little bit of a break. Thank you to Henry for bringing us this first hour. Thank you to Glenn and Dan. And Thomas for bringing the second. And now if somebody steps up to do the third hour, well, challenge accepted. So anyway, the phone lines are open. 304-574-8178 is one of the two. 304-574-8178. And the other line, the gizmo line as we like to call it, is 304-663-HORN. 304-663-HORN. 304-663-4676. Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. That's easy too. Email, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Twitter, @BobKincaid. Facebook, how about that? Bob Kincaid. I sure do like saying that Bob Kincaid a lot. I do. That just makes me happy. So reach out any way that you wish. This is Conversation Radio. This is Titanic Tuesday. And hey, yeah. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Let Bob!
Bring my pretty
ears!
Don't ever start a band!
He worked hard all year, just wanted a few weeks alone. But his old lady's into modeling, she can't get away from a phone. Besides, she bitches about the mosquito. She sits down there, there is nothing to do. Her goddamn phone never stops ringing. He'll try the service in a day, maybe two. Well, he's on his third drink before the wheels of the plane leave the ground. Making parts with the steward is high over long out of sound. She's also spending some time on the island. Too much city madness gives her the blues. They make her day to go dancing and dining. It seems neither has that much to lose. The weather is here. I wish you were beautiful. My thoughts aren't too clear. But don't run away. My girlfriend's a bore. My job is too dutiful. Hell, nobody's perfect. Who do you like to play? I feel together today. Well, now that's just the start of a well-deserved overdue bend. Meanwhile, back in the city, certain people are starting to cringe. His lawyers are calling his parents. His girlfriend doesn't know what to think. His partners are studying their options. He's just singing and harder and drink. The weather is here. I wish you were beautiful. The skies are too clear. Life's so easy today. The beer is too cold. The daiquiri's too fruitful. No place like home when you're this far away. The daiquiri's too fruitful. No place like home when you're this far away. Time for the play. I need time for the play. Time for the play. I need time for the play. I need time for the play. I need time for the play.
It's Tuesday, March 24, 2015.
And many of the alarmists on global warming, they got a problem because the science doesn't back them up.
Get out your popcorn. Ted Cruz is running for president.
What he said is absolutely false.
But California Governor Jerry Brown is unimpressed.
I think it's inevitable that it's going to be required.
Is mandatory water rationing in California's future? Plus, in Florida, don't say climate change, or you might be sent to a mental hospital.
Yeah, if you're thinking of going to Florida, you might want to go to a mental hospital anyway. Just saying. All of that and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and, yes, snarky comment.
Now, the answer to California's drought is Jesus Christ. Rain will follow repentance.
Abortion, homosexuality, pornography, Hollywood's movies that promote sexual immorality, violence, bloodshed, witchcraft, all of it has combined to reach a level of depravity, and God has no other choice but to cut off the rain.
Oh, well, that explains that. I thought it was global warming. This is your Green News Report.
I'm your soaker. Okay, Desi Doyen, apparently this right-winger Rick Wiles thinks the California drought out here is your fault because you are a harridan, a harlot, a sinner. I don't know what it is, but it's your fault that God's cut off the water.
You know, those farmers who are running out of water in the Central Valley, they're kind of majority Republican.
Yeah, they are, but apparently they're paying the price for your sins. Aside from your sins, Desi Doyen, what do you have for us today? I know it's a very California-centric episode today, I think.
Yes, it is, for good reason. Republican Senator Ted Cruz of Texas announced on Monday that he is running for the 2016 Republican presidential nomination. Cruz is one of the Senate's prominent climate change deniers, and in a recent appearance on Late Show with Seth Meyers, he took the opportunity to spread wildly false information.
Satellite data demonstrate for the last 17 years, there's been zero warming, none whatsoever.
Zero warming, Desi Doyen? Why have we been wasting all our time on this?
Well, it turns out he's actually quite wrong.
What?
California's Democratic Governor Jerry Brown was scathing when he was asked to respond to Cruz's remarks on NBC's Meet the Press. He says climate change science denial should be disqualifying.
What he said is absolutely false, and that man betokens such a level of ignorance and a direct falsification of the existing scientific data. It's shocking, and I think that man has rendered himself absolutely unfit to be running for office.
Wow, strong words from the governor, although I'm still trying to figure out what the hell betokens means.
Well, while you're pondering that, remember, back in 2012, the corporate media treated climate change as unmentionable, so this could be a sign that it will be a defining issue in 2016.
It will indeed, and I look forward to, as each of these guys gets into the race, information about their opinion on global warming. I suspect almost all of them have the same one. It's not happening. These aren't the droids you're looking for.
No, of course not. Now, Governor Brown, for his part, is dealing with the immediate and deepening impacts of an historic drought in California, which studies indicate has been intensified by global warming. Brown has introduced a $1 billion emergency drought relief package in the state legislature.
That doesn't seem like very much, considering the crisis that we're now up against out here, with NASA finding that we have maybe one more year left of surface water.
That's right, and California's Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom agrees with you. In an interview with MSNBC, he says that these emergency drought measures will help, but they don't go nearly far enough to address the scale of the crisis.
We're going to talk about conservation, which we must, and efficiency, which we must, but I think we're going to have to move towards mandatory rationing. We have a voluntary rationing that's been out for a year. It's just simply inadequate to the moment.
And it's important to note that no California governor has ever declared mandatory rationing in the history of the state.
It's also important to note that Gavin Newsom, our lieutenant governor, is planning on running for governor in 2018. So this is no small thing for a guy seeking higher office to come out and call for mandatory water rationing. It either tells you how extraordinary this moment is or how crazy Gavin Newsom is. And I don't think he's crazy.
Finally, speaking of crazy, in Florida, although Republican Governor Rick Scott, a climate change denier, has denied that his administration has an unwritten rule barring state employees from even saying the words global warming, well, now a Florida state employee has filed a complaint against the state saying he was suspended in retaliation for mentioning climate change at a public event and was ordered to undergo a psychiatric evaluation before he'd be allowed to return to work.
He was ordered to have a psych evaluation because he uttered the words global warming or climate change?
Yeah.
Remember what I said about Florida? You got to be crazy to want to go there, I think, at this point. Thank you, Desi Doyen. For much more on all of our stories today and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download us anytime via iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Does that make me crazy?
I love that song. And a little reminder before we go to the phones, one line open, one line not. The Gizmo line is open, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. A reminder, a very, very special
conversation taking place at the beginning of the program tomorrow evening. And I think you'll enjoy it. It is a, let's call it an eyewitness to pop culture history conversation. How's that? Let's run over to the Skype line, and I suspect we have Jim. Hey, Jim, is that you?
No.
Yes?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's you.
I'm not on Skype.
Well, I explain that all the time. We call it the Skype line. You don't have to use Skype, but it comes in through a Skype interface. Yes, you're on the Skype line.
Duly noted, duly noted. No, we've been talking a long time over the years about certain things that you've issued, certain saving issues that you've issued tonight. And, the first thing I'd like to bring up quickly is, we simply cannot be, in the position of holding up other nations when we ourselves are in such desperate situations. I mean, we can go back to Mexico in the 19th century when Louis Napoleon established Maximilian. Well, you see how long Maximilian lasted when Louis Napoleon went through his troops.
Not terribly.
Mm-mm. No, not quite. I'm sure that Habsburg had definitely desired to, or should have, never signed the Treaty of Miramar. But nonetheless, we know what happened there.
Would have been better off in Vienna.
Well, it is a beautiful place on the Dalmatian coast. It was called Miramar, as a matter of fact, view of the sea. And second thing, as far as the salinity of the oceans are concerned, well, that salinity is quite key to the United Kingdom or the whole part of Northern Europe, or particularly the United Kingdom, having what is called the climate West Coast Marine. And that's the type of temperature of the water that has bathed the shores of Great Britain. And if that should continue to change at this, astounding rate, then I think it's going to get a lot cooler and a lot more uninhabitable.
Well, the report did note that Great Britain should expect to continue to warm for the immediate future, but that can change. I mean, it's telling that this research was performed by a German and a Dane, don't you think? Because they've got the people of both nations have a lot to lose out of the ongoing stupidity. Primarily driven, and let's be honest about this, and I think you alluded to it, Jim, primarily driven by the ignorance of the American people.
Well, they're being kept ignorant by Fox News and other people like that, and other types of prejudices and ad hominem arguments that hold no validity whatsoever. I mean, this country is being dumbed down, has been dumbed down progressively, particularly, I would say, since 1980 or earlier than that. But it really started getting dumbed down in 1980 when Ronald Reagan took the presidential oath. And it's just incredible. I mean, people think that the infrastructure of this country, it's going to last and last and last as last as long as the pyramids. That's not so. Remember when you and I were on the air and I read you that whole list of the biannual report of the American Society of Engineers?
Oh, yes. The one where we got all the D's?
Got all the D minuses, yeah. Dams, bridges, stuff like that. And the roads and everything, the power grid. I mean, we have a power grid that's 50 years beyond the time. If and that's being very generous as far as the number is concerned, because it's just basically cobbled together with duct tape and baling wire, and really could not sustain any type of real cataclysm, whether it's engineered by the weather or by cyber warfare, things of that nature. And it's really, really quite antiquated. And we really need to spend our money on our own people who live within our own shores. And, you know, as far as health, as far as food for people who are hungry, and where it's definitely needed. Because, you know, where is our return on the investment for throwing it away on people who are not even grateful to us?
And I'm damned if I can figure it out, Jim. You tell me.
I don't have that.
I mean, what is the benefit to our dear and beloved and abiding, sweet Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm friendship with Israel? What does it get us? It gets us spied on. It got a bunch of our sailors killed, and our government tried to cover that up for eons and still doesn't like to talk about it. It's gotten one American citizen murdered in cold blood aboard a ship. It got another American citizen the living daylights beaten out of him, you know, a teenage boy who was visiting family in the occupied territories.
I just wonder how long Israel could maintain its territorial integrity or its national integrity without the $3 billion. There are definite interests that support Israel as being our little enclave right there in the middle of a pretty hostile world. And
yeah, here's a question. If we didn't show such favoritistic treatment to Israel, would that enclave be, or would that part of the world necessarily be so hostile to us?
Well, that's a very good question. That's a very good question. Absolutely. I mean, we've seen in the recent political thing with Netanyahu, who said that there will be no Palestinian recognition within Israel, de facto. And then he turns right around, because I think within the borders of Israel proper, 20% of that country are Arabs or Palestinians. I mean, that's one-fifth of the country. And it would behoove them to try to live peacefully as they can, but I'm afraid that's just not going to be possible. It would appear with the emergence of ISIS and a lot of these other groups and that are just bent upon establishing some type of caliphate or something that's what the size of Great Britain now, at least what I'm hearing. I don't know. But I wish I had the answer to these questions, but I can certainly see the reason for them being brought to the surface as far as possible alterations for assets being deployed in these areas. I mean, I can certainly recognize that. I mean, I'm certainly no Zionist or anything like that, and I can understand the desire for Israel to maintain its nation state, which was guaranteed ever since 1948. And a place for these people to go, because I have the greatest sympathy for the people who founded Israel and what they came from.
Well, I'm not sitting here opposing Israel's right to exist, Jim. I mean, you know that. You've been listening for long time. There's not an anti-Semitic bone in my body. I have a tremendous amount of respect and admiration and downright fondness for the contributions of the Jewish people through history. This would be a very different world without them.
Oh, absolutely.
And we would be the poorer for it. But there is a difference. But and I'm sorry, I will not accept the false equivalence that being opposed to the pretty much outright fascist current policies of Israel somehow equates to anti-Semitism. It does not. I don't think you think that.
Well,
I mean, if that nation is actually to survive, and history says it won't, okay, I'm just being brutally candid here. The history, to the extent that it is history that's recorded in the Bible, shows that it couldn't survive. At least, you know, let's see, the Babylonians, the Assyrians, the Syrians, the Egyptians.
Well, they've been overrun by everybody. In the ancient world, really.
And then, you know, you move forward into the era of the Crusades with the, and I think that's the nearest to a one-to-one analog, the kingdom of Outremer, it couldn't survive without being economically and militarily propped up by the crusading nations of Europe. And frankly, the mere dynamics of population suggest that there are problems there. And you know, it's especially galling, and I know that European leaders were deeply offended. Every time something bad happens, say, in Europe, Bibi is always on the television hollering, "Now is the time for every Jew in the world to come to Israel." You know, that was, you know, that guy's idea. Let's get them all in one place. I don't want that. Europe doesn't want that. And it takes a real maniac, megalomaniac of the political variety. I personally think Beatty is probably a sociopath, to want that.
Well, I know he was calling for that particularly after the incident with Charlie Hebdo in Paris. And calling for all Jews to migrate from Europe to Israel.
Well, Doctor Who in the chat room has a question for you. He says, ask Jim if he sees any difference in the way the gullible people of Germany bought into Hitler's propaganda and what we're seeing today in America with Cruz and Walker, to name two, willful ignorance and refusal to inform oneself.
And just a minute, you're a little too fast for me. I'm sorry. I'm not nearly as quick as I used to be. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Just the question is, do you see any difference between the way gullible people in Germany bought into Hitler's propaganda and the way that gullible people in the United States are willing to buy into people like Ted Theodore Cruz and Scott Walker of Wisconsin?
Oh, yeah, I do. I mean, people like Adolf Hitler and people like Ted Cruz are dangerous individuals.
Are they out of a similar mold, do you think? Or does Ted Cruz's does his adherence to right-wing evangelical fundamentalism somehow set him apart?
Well, that's a hard question to answer, but it's an easy question to answer, and I'm not trying to get on the Charlie Chaplin train and Ted Cruz, okay?
Yeah.
But there are definite similarities. I mean, I heard Ted Cruz on Seth Meyers, and I mentioned that to you, and you played some of it.
I played the audio the next night, exactly.
Right, and this guy is an absolute fruitcake. But you know, Hitler, and I'm sorry if I offend anybody by mentioning his name, Hitler wasn't crazy.
No.
He was stupid. But he was, in the 1930s, he offered the German people a way out of the ignominy and shame that they had suffered at the hands of the Versailles Treaty and the degradation of Germany. And then again, you know, things got a little bit better in Germany with the Weimar Republic and with American loans and stuff of that nature. And then when the Great Depression, the Great Depression occurred, that was his clarion call, because he realized then, when Germans did not have bread, when their currency had been so devalued, and he said, make yourself proud, you are German, you will no longer be downtrodden by other nations. And then, of course, he had to attach it to a number of people who were responsible for it, and one of those, of course, it was the anti-Semitic thing that Hitler used. And if you tell a lie long enough and big enough, well, people are going to start to believe it. And there were some good things that were done initially by the fascists in Germany. But then this is 1933 when he came to power. By 1935, you've got the Nuremberg Laws that basically made a certain segment of the population undesirable. Then you had the population, you know, the population movement, the effort to make them immigrate. And then we know what the solution was eventually arrived upon. But people like Ted Cruz bear certain, I don't think, to tell you the truth, and I don't mean to offend anybody when I say this, Ted Cruz is not nearly as smart as Adolf Hitler.
Probably not. Probably
not. I mean, he's
You know, like I said, there's a reason he jumped out there. Okay, and I know people are sick of hearing about him, so we'll go and work another side of the street here in a second. But
right.
But he jumped out there because this isn't a presidential campaign. This is an evangelical plate-passing hustle, all right? And that's a fact. By doing this, he has gotten his front feet in the trough alongside Mike Huckabee getting his front feet in the trough, because those are the two who play to that particular market share. We're not talking about constituents. We're not talking about demographics. We're talking about market share. And by announcing, Ted Cruz has hoped to get his back feet in the trough, too. Anybody who's ever been around hogs at the trough knows that, you know, the happiest one is the one who has all four trotters in the trough. And that's what that is. No, I think, just to shift the conversation a little bit, Jim, I think the greater worry, you know, there's in the Republican camp, You've got the Jebby people, and you've got the Scott Walker people. Now, unless this primary season upcoming goes very, very different from what I anticipate, I think those are actually your two players. Unless somebody should manage to figure out a way to indict Scott Walker between now and January, you know, Rand Paul, really? I mean, then again, okay, so let's make it a bit of a troika then. It's Rand, I'd say my money's on Rand Paul, Scott Walker, and Jebby. Rand Paul is going to bring people along. He's actually going to bring along people, oddly enough, from the disaffected, so-called left, progressives who think, you know, well, Rand Paul stood up against the drones. He's a progressive. And they'll get suckered in that way, because they frequently do. Thus far, they've proven themselves able to. So Rand Paul and that thing on his head, the Koch brothers' money is behind Scott Walker and has been for quite some time. So there's at least a willing proto endorsement there. And then there's just the Bush family's ability to rat and squirrel and screw and bite and pinch and gouge and pull hair and kidney punch their way into power, because that's what they're really, really good at. The rest of Ted Cruz, please. Marco Rubio, not so much. Lindsey Graham, who's left?
Well, there's a great deal of truth in what you say. I mean, the Bush family particularly. Well, I don't think we need another Bush in the White House, that's for sure. And we certainly don't need Ted Cruz.
And of course, the ongoing conniption on our side of people hollering, please, not Hillary, anything but Hillary, because there really is something in the American spirit, especially on the progressive side of things, that resists dynastic politics. I mean, we saw that until his career was ended so brutally and prematurely. You know, Bobby was kind of on the way, but there was no guarantee that he was going to get the nomination in Chicago in 1968. And Ted Kennedy, for all of his efforts, the United States, the people of the United States generally don't like dynasty politics.
Well, Ted Kennedy screwed himself. I mean, on that trip to Alaska, he did some things that really messed his own chance up to get the nomination. I think you remember his antics on that particular trip.
But it's also frustrating to hear all of these progressive people, and a lot of them mean well, but there's a lot of organizations out there that are just fundraising on this, and it's kind of icky. But this notion that somehow or another Elizabeth Warren is going to rise, that we can pray her into rising, or that we can somehow hosanna her into, and Elizabeth Warren doesn't have, my estimation only, Elizabeth Warren does not have a snowball's chance in hell or a wax cat's chance in hell of getting the Democratic nomination.
Oh, I agree with that.
What's the point?
You know, as far as Mrs. Clinton is concerned, I mean, there are a lot of things that have surrounded the Clintons and this, that, and the other. But as far as the one who is possibly electable, I think she's probably going to lead back. I have a great deal of respect for Mrs. Clinton in spite of what people say about her.
Well, there's a lot there to respect. It's the fact, from the progressive side of the aisle, it's the fact that there's nothing progressive about her that puts people off. It's the fact that she supported our disastrous war in Iraq. It's the fact that she has tried to out-hawk the other hawks. And frankly, you know, she ran a terrible campaign in 2008. Frankly, there are a lot of who think that had that campaign been, she should have been able to put Barack Obama away without much effort, but she didn't. So there's a certain fear that she's going to run another terrible campaign. The only real people who are out there actively sniffing the dirt and testing the waters are Jim Webb, former senator from Virginia, and Martin O'Malley, former governor of what, Maryland? And those are the two alternatives to Mrs. Clinton. But apparently that doesn't suit us either, and we're gonna cry and stomp our feet and hold our breath till we turn blue, trying to force Elizabeth Warren to run for president, which is just, I mean,
she simply doesn't have the assets.
It's not just that, Jim. How many times? And I read somewhere, and I kind of agreed with it. Well, I did agree with it. There was somebody. There are people who have pointed out that hollering for Elizabeth Warren to run, no matter how many times she says no, that there's something kind of misogynistic about it, because it's like saying that a woman saying no doesn't mean no. And I have to wonder, does she have to skyride it above the city of Oz? I mean, what the is necessary? How many times does she have to say no?
Well, apparently she hasn't said no enough until she finally, by some miracle, she will be drafted or overtaken by events into saying yes. I don't know. But the, you know, looking at things realistically in terms of assets and experience, Mrs. Clinton, yes, has made a lot of mistakes. But I still have the greatest respect for her as a human being and as a public servant. I really do. I've always liked Mrs. Clinton, and I've always liked the idea of having a lady for being our president. And that's just something I think that that's always been a dream of mine. Now, it may be a castle built upon sand, but it's something I've always wanted.
Well, to be fair, Hillary Clinton has had to deal with a level of vitriol, personal attacks, poison pens, the likes of which almost, I think it's safe to say,
that would kill a normal human being.
No male politician has ever had to deal with them.
That's absolutely right, and that's one of the reasons I've always been on her side. And, you know, I hate the fact that they have dragged all this stuff about her. And, you know, just peccadilloes. Some of it, she could have helped. But I will say this. Back when Bill had his problem with Monica Lewinsky, she stuck by him. And she took something bad and made it into something good. And, of course, being a woman coming into the Senate, I mean, you know, you can imagine how people felt about that. But compared to Ted Cruz and Hillary Clinton coming into the Senate, I think Ted Cruz is the most hated man in the Senate. That's one thing that, you know, I think.
Well, he's not exactly a darling of his own party after the shenanigans that he cut trying to shut the government down. But it plays to the Rapture Ready crowd.
I don't know, Bob. I'm not a member of of all that. And to tell you the truth, you are, I guess, much more up on these things because you deal with them every day. I do not. But I would hope that we would have the sense enough in this country to realize in which direction we're heading. And it's not a very good direction. And it's almost getting to the point where people in the country just don't have any type of faith in our government anymore. I mean, our government is always, you know, there was a time when we could be proactive, and now we're always being reactive.
Empires simply do not come back. Empires crumble and fail. All empires do. And we entered empire, and we are experiencing it.
Well, you've been preaching that doctrine for a long time. I'm not sure exactly at which stage of development we are, but I know in order for an empire to continue to exist, it's going to have strength from within. And that strength is quickly diminishing in terms of moral support, in terms of physical infrastructure, in terms of economic, I'll call it economic dislocation, in which 1% of this population in America owns most of it. And there are so many people out there who are so disaffected and disconnected, and they've gone to these different splinter groups. I don't know who you can depend on to do what would be amenable or practical to solve the situation. I guess I haven't helped you solve many problems in our conversation tonight, but, you know, I do
well, but the beginning of problem solving, Jim, is sorting out what the problem is, and I think we have done some of that.
Well, yeah, in order for to realize that something's wrong, you've got to admit that there's something wrong and do something about it. You know, I mean, I don't know what kind of 10 or 12 step program this country's got to go through to correct some of the situations in which we've gotten ourselves involved, but it's gonna be rough on whoever is.
I don't know what would step one be for the United States of America. We realized we were powerless over ignorance, and our lives had become unmanageable.
I think that will be a pretty good way to put it. Really, I do. To realize that the problem is bigger than you are.
Well, isn't that another way of hearkening back to Pogo, and we have met the enemy, and they is us?
I'm sorry?
You remember
Pogo,
Pogo, that great Okefenokee philosopher? We have met the enemy, and they is us?
Excuse me. Yes, I do now. I'm sorry, we had a bad transmission there.
No worries, no worries. Well, Jim, it's very good talking to you, and you have yourself a good evening.
And same to you.
All right. Take care now.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's our buddy Jim calling from not too terribly far from here. Let's keep rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Two nights in a row, I think I must not have a wife.
Well, no, I figured you were calling back to give us an update on the Donnybrook, the trucker Donnybrook you were about to witness last night, John.
Oh, the ass whipping was spectacular. The man actually pulled off his slipper and started whacking.
Monday.
It was funny sound. He was like, "You little nasty son of a bitch, you just treated me so bad." And the guy's like, all right, damn, stop. And I'm like, "Guys, calm down. Let's go have lunch." We ended up all going to have supper and had a fairly interesting conversation.
Yeah, you know, there's very little in this world that gravy can't fix.
Yeah, me with my health problem, gravy. Yeah. Kill me, why don't you, you bastard? But I would like to insert a possibility just for the sake of conversation. I got this because of a conference call I had today from some friends of mine in D.C. And put this in the pipe and smoke it for a second and see what you think. What you saw Monday from Master Cruz was actually the beginnings of his vice presidential run.
Oh, I was about to go there talking with Jim.
He's going to try to lock up the evangelical Southern Confederate state vote so that he has leverage that when either Walker or Bush or whomever gets it, in order for them to have a chance to beat Hillary.
I can see that, John, as a much greater possibility with Scott Walker than with Jebby, because Scott Walker is the son of a preacher man for a beginner, and he buys into that evangelical crap. You know, Jebby turned his back. Well, he's two faced, so it's kind of hard to find, but Jebby turned his back on the ancient Protestant religion of his Walker and Bush forebears, and converted to Roman Catholicism in order to marry his wife Columba, and so he's gonna have to have, I don't know, maybe, I just can't imagine, because,
well,
George was stupid, okay, and he recognized he needed somebody smart and evil enough to be president for him while he was passing out and choking to death on pretzels. So that's how you get Dick Cheney. Jebby is rumored to be reasonably intelligent, and it's pretty obvious that he got the really hateful, potty trained at gunpoint kind of miserable, shitty attitude of his mama. So I just have a real hard time seeing him pick Ted Theodore Cruz, because remember this too, John. For Ted Theodore Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Raphael, this is like printing money. All he's got to do is go out there and work the evangelical hustings, and you know, he can rake it in with both fists. He doesn't even have to be serious about it. You know, look, Herb Cain parlayed his idiotic campaign into a radio gig. Sarah Palin has become some sort of permafrost Kardashian.
Permafrost Kardashian. I almost like that.
That was on the fly, but it worked.
Yeah. The dice rolled. You rolled a seven. But some of the analysis I heard was kind of interesting. Scott Walker, as you mentioned a little earlier, he seems to have a pretty good lock on the Koch money, the individual billionaire wildcatters. And Jeb, of course, has the establishment money. And so one of the analysis that I've participated in today reflected on the idea that in campaign finance law, once you've declared you're running for presidency, you're limited during the actual campaign process before the public money kicks in, during later on after the primaries. You're limited to $2,700 and some odd cents per donation during the campaign process, and what they call the dark money is no longer available. Now, before you announce, you can go around and do speeches and everything else, but there you can take all the money you want because you're not officially, quote-unquote, a candidate. You have not declared, you have not filed the paperwork, blah, blah, blah. It is suspected that part of the reason why he jumped out as early as he did is because he had no access to that big slush fund out there. Nobody likes him. He's got no PAC money. He's got no Coke money. He's got no sugar daddy Adelson to give him money. So he went ahead and jumped in now because there was no downside for him because he has no money to begin with anyway. He doesn't have any sugar daddies. And so he went ahead and jumped in now to get that higher profile and to try to see if he could lock down or at least excite and potentially excite the evangelicals back. And what they're thinking he's trying to do is he's trying to recreate the 1980s, 1990s with the moral majority and all that stuff. That's why he went to Liberty University to make his official speech.
Right, sure.
He's trying, like you said, he's also going to get into the huckster program because if all else fails and he doesn't get anywhere, he still gets those mailing lists that he could sell off and everything else like Huckstery does. So, I mean, it's a plus-plus for him. But the bet money running right now is that what he's trying to do is he's trying to lock down the evangelical vote enough to where he's got a bargaining chip for, if not president, then maybe Secretary of State or Treasury Secretary or something. But those are all down in the future. But the conversation I had today, like I said, was very fascinating because the smart money is saying that that's what he's trying to do. He knows he can't win the presidency. He's too radical. He's got too many people that hate him. And he's too damn goofy. He knows that. Now, your friend Jim was right. He's not the smartest. You know, cookie in the box, but he could not possibly get where he's at now without some type of cunning and at least a surface understanding of his situation. So, you know, I'm inclined to believe it. I'm inclined to believe that he's trying to carve himself out of a niche, and he's going to
again, John, he's a young guy. Okay, Ted Cruz is a young guy. So this is his first toe dip, and he'll learn, and he will he'll build strength within the Republican fundraising base or fundraising apparatus. He will draw the professional campaigners to him, and then if there happens to be a Democrat elected in 2016. Then he's in a much better position in 2020. You know, Huckstery is older than him. The future belongs to Cruz, as it were.
Yeah, he's playing the long game. His advisors have got him playing the long game. There's a famous science now it's a very old science fiction series, but one of the titles of one of the books is called The Long View. The science fiction book was written back in the time when space travel was done by hibernating sleep. You would travel from planet to planet in suspension. And the heroes that are coming back to Earth hundreds of years after they had left to find a world that had turned into where people were taking and tattooing themselves with gems, and it was a very thin crust of elites that owned everything and ran the planet like it was their personal fiefdoms. You get the point. And, you know, that was all fun and all that. And, of course, that went that way as well. But editorial columns and their opinion pages with multiple versions of why he should run. And, of course, they're saying when they were interviewed to ask why they were doing it, they were saying, oh, we're not saying that she should run to win the presidency, but she represents such issues that are so valuable to the American people that she should run in order to, you know, and what they were not saying is they were saying trying to push Hillary Clinton to the left. Yeah, okay, fine, whatever. But, that's the way, you said it yourself earlier. The 2016 election is either A, going to be on the Republican side a bloodbath as they all scramble around trying to win, and then on the other side, the Democratic side, the most dangerous thing that's going to be out there, in my opinion, this is my opinion, shoot me if you want, but Hillary's going to screw up because she's going to fall into the same mindset that she had back in 2008, where she was the inevitable one. And she's going to end up getting into that mindset again where, and she even set the stage for it when she did her concession speech about the, the 8 million cracks in the ceiling, blah, blah, blah. Well, hell, she pretty much announced her presidential intentions that night. And everything since then has been, basically laying the seeds and being a quiet, dutiful Secretary of State, making no waves, making no enemies. And she's, I guess, going to hope that she can cruise her way through it and not get any opposition, which just may not necessarily be the best thing for America anyway. So that's my opinion. So.
Well, I think we could look for every bit of the insane clown car posse in 2016 that we had in 2012. I mean, you got to admit, Sean, it was awfully entertaining for a while.
Oh, it was very entertaining, but it's I have a friend of mine that lives in Germany, and he watched. He's a political freak. He's way worse than you are. I mean, he has like multiple screens up on his computer and stuff, and he's watching all the channels at the same time, and everything. He's crazy.
Oh, he's you mean he's like that guy in Guardians of the Galaxy? The guy that you saw the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, had all the screens all and was monitoring every. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was watching all that stuff, and the thing about it is that he lives in Germany. He's an expat. And he lives in Germany, so he has, all the local media. He has access to the media in Belgium and Italy and Greece and all that, because, of course, being in Europe, they're all on top of each other. And so, a television signal in France gets halfway through Germany. So he was able to sit there, and he would tell me, he says, you Americans do not realize how reviled you are. He says, we like you for what you potentially could be and what you say you are, but you come over here, you walk around like you walk around, you're fat, tasty, doughy ass, walking up down the streets and demanding ice and water and acting like everything is supposed to be the way that you want it, and you run around in your foreign policy, and you go to countries that are decades and hundreds of years older than you are and demand them to live like you do, you don't realize just how reviled you are. And I when he tells me that stuff, and I stop and think about it, and I guess he's got a point. We're granted, in many ways, we are the oldest democracy in the world, but we're not the best. We're not even a true democracy. We're this kind of republic thing going on. And, there's no room for non-majority ideas. I've always liked, the British system or the parliamentary system, where you had to get some agreement with some of the lesser parties, some of the lesser voices, you had to work with them, and you had to give them things. You had to negotiate. You had to compromise. We don't have that. In this country, we have a winner-take-all system where if you just happen to get that 51st person, then you get to do whatever the hell you want. like those jackasses over there in the House of Representatives. They've got the majority, and they're now talking, and John Boehner today made a comment. He basically has tossed the entire budget process up in the air and said, okay, guys, you guys fight it out. Now, they've already run this country up against the wall two or three times when it comes to raising the debt ceiling or whatever. You know, and I just, people look at this country and go, you guys are nuts. You elect a bunch of uneducated, ignorant snake handlers. I've actually heard that term in the last couple of days from a guy from another country. Snake handlers. And you expect to run the largest military in the world with a bunch of crazy people?
Yeah.
The rest of the world's scared of you guys. Dang, I just realized I did a little minor filibuster myself. I need to stop that.
No, you don't need to stop it. You did a lovely job of it, John, and it's good to hear from you. Is it all quiet in the parking lot this evening?
Oh, I'm just about 5 minutes away from parking. I just about reached my location, but I thought this time I would jump in with my little hands-free super tech run through my radio device, and that's why the phone seems to be a bit sounds different today.
Ah, okay.
I got all the fancy technology so I can almost run it like I'm a Borg cyborg. You know, I have been assimilated into my truck in order to make the phone call. Go figure. But safety first. Anyway, I thought I would put that little speculation out there for fun and games, and we'll see how the commune reacts to it. I will disappear now.
All right, you take care, John, and have a good evening. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
From out on the road, our buddy John, not far from knocking off for the night. It is about 3 minutes before the hour, 3 minutes before 8 o'clock here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. And we will take a short break and come back with more of your calls. We've got a caller online on the Gizmo line, the Skype line, which you do not have to have Skype to use. We just call it that. Maybe we should just call it Harold. But that line is open, 304-574-8178. And if I didn't mention it, we have good news because Darlene finished off Johannes Colorado Census's challenge for the evening. Thank you very kindly to Darlene and to everyone who helped out on that effort, and thank you to John for making the challenge. It is tremendous when we can do that. And, you know, we got another hour. Maybe we can jump out a little further ahead. It would be wonderful. Note coming in from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan, who isn't. I mean, she is marvelously coherent. She just isn't in Kansas, Stan. Diane notes, I've had 2 days of an unexpected layover in Rochester, New York, due to weather at O'Hare on Monday. But I can still listen to the horn in New York as well as in Kansas. Yay! Too bad the American people can't leverage the natural bonds of community to fight and destroy the insipid fascism. I'll say it again. A culture as individualistic as we are can be bamboozled into destroying constructive community, the most important resource we could have. By all the data, we are highly individualistic and masculine, and we defer to vested power. The power elite have our number. There's a reason she's the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan, and occasionally in Rochester, New York. Oh, yes, there is. Let's read that again. By all data, we are highly individualistic and masculine, and we defer to vested power. The power elites have our number. Signed, Diane, stranded in New York. There are worse places. See, I can't sneak anything past Marty. Marty noting, if one line would be called Harold, would you call the other one Maud? Aren't movie buffs just awesome? Yeah, indeed. So, a little break. And then back to the phones. This is listener-supported conversation radio. in anticipation of the upcoming presidential circus, this. I'm Bob Kincaid. Minutes past the hour as we move into the third and final hour of this Titanic Tuesday on the horn, and let us go straightway to the gizmo line. Wait, where'd you go? Aren't you there anymore? Okay, well, then we will go straight to the Skype line. Hey, welcome to the program, Bill.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Yeah, I'm okay. Interesting night. Jim, Jim said a lot of things that I was happy to hear, because he's got a real good connection to how the rest of the world looks at us. And I have to agree with him, you know, no doubt about it.
I mean, I think, to be fair, we've got a better reputation than we had when Dim Leader was in office, but that's a pretty that's a pretty damned low bar to hurdle.
Yeah. And the whole Israeli situation is, it's a tightrope. Because I think there's a strong right wing because of what happened and, you know, in the world, the Holocaust era. That's something that really can, that can twist your neck, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, treating the other guy the way you were treated does not help you in the long run. In fact, you notice the two men who settled the war between Egypt and Israel?
Yeah, they're dead.
And were they both?
Yeah, neither of them died of natural causes, no.
What?
Neither of them died of natural causes.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the fanatics, you know, they don't want to hear about it. What did you just do? You mean we're not killing each other anymore? What are we going to do now?
Let's kill the people who wanted us to stop killing each other. See how it works? Yeah.
And so you mentioned the USS Liberty, and you know that Johnson had sent out the U.S. Air Force to go after these guys. And then he had to call them back after that boom.
Yeah.
And I guess the problem was the upshipment. And what the hell was his name? His tanks and the carrier go after the Goyes. He was going to go across country with his tanks on carriers because they move a lot faster that way. You know, tanks move very slowly, comparatively speaking, with Gollum there. And my first sick jobs of Guderian and FC proud of the was doing. Maybe there's not, because it's, you know, my first being Jewish week department, trying to figure out an answer, and because what was the agreement the English made during the First World War era? There was a pact of some kind of struck. Shouldn't know the name anymore, but yeah, I'm not going to tie a line, but I was just a lookout on Sherman. And you know that the great line of Sherman's was, if nominated, I will not run. If elected, I will not serve. Now, that's my idea of a good, just, you know, he could have been elected president.
That's right. Yeah.
He could elect. Yeah. Yeah, that's that war hero stuff, you know, was popular. In Hawaii were named after a Civil War general who I think when Chief Ranch went, they just wouldn't quit. I guess that's correct. I don't know.
Well,
but I owe tonight.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Bill.
You take care and give somebody else a chance here.
All right. You have a good evening, Bill. Bye now. Our buddy Bill in England. Go over to my pipeline at 304-578-1178. I think we've got Jim from Louisiana. Is that you, Jim?
That may, I don't know. Bill is like some honorary professor of history, because he is awesome with his, especially with the Indochina and the post-world information he puts out. Yeah.
Spring.
Yeah. But the thing, you know, you were talking about, and the other three callers were great, that I was thinking about the so-called future of the country. I wish I could be more optimistic, but it's like, to me, it's like FOP. It basically boils down to future occupation policies of the United States. I mean, it seems the country's been running on that since I've been alive, even before
And
then Truman, and then it just seemed like to get worse and worse. I mean, by 54, we were, no, 50, we were in Korea, although that might have been a laudable or a reasonable war we got into, is that, you know, we were helping the South Koreans defend against the North Koreans, who seemed to be batshit crazy, and they seemed to be even worse. But Vietnam, by the time you get over to Vietnam, you know, in the, how we went to Vietnam in the 50s, we were supporting the French. I forget the figure, well, I remember the figure, but I don't know when. We're supporting them 80% financially. Way before we got in, technically, you know, we had advisors, you know, way before JFK. And that was a big reason why he got his, I figure, one of the big reasons he got his head blown off in Dealey Plaza. And then you saw where everything went after that.
Yeah, it's, well, there are those moments, you know, in the, throughout all of history, but it seems like in the last 75 years. And one of those is that. And then there's, as I've mentioned several times of late, there's the ascension of Ronnie Reagan, who may have been already in the throes of Alzheimer's when he took the oath of office the first time. Reagan is that break point for me. Reagan is that point where the center can no longer hold and everything begins to fly apart. And of course, where he is, where I spit on the ground at the mere mention of the man's name, he remains, for reasons that I cannot fully ever understand, Jim, a saint, a semi-secular saint to the right wing. I mean, okay, so I got a clip here. It won't take long. I got a clip here from former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson. On specifically on point. Check this out. I mean, this is just how weird it gets.
I wish Reagan was rise from the dead and go back. He was a great president. The biggest thing is Reagan just believed in America. It was real simple. He believed in America. He believed in foundational values, and he wasn't ashamed to enunciate them. The current president does not believe in America. He does not believe in the fundamental values. He's raised in a different environment entirely, and his mentors have been leftists who don't really love this country. And that's where he grew up. You listen to that pastor he had out there for so many years, Sunday after Sunday after Sunday, ranting against America. Well, Reagan didn't do that. I'm proud of Regent University, by the way. Our previous dean of the Robertson School of Government started that Reagan Symposium. It's taken on a lot of momentum and some excellent speakers and wonderful. They have books that come out of that symposium, and it was very well attended and highly regarded.
Thanks to our buddies at Right Wing Watch for gathering that. But it's like they live in a separate universe. You know, Jim, with Reagan, we began to see the decline of earning power in the United States. We see the decline of the middle class. We see the dissolution of the single wage earner family. We see the rise in divorce. We see the rise in homelessness. We see the rise in hunger. And this is somehow because he loved America more, and Barack Obama just doesn't. I mean, do you think, Jim, that Pat Robertson gets done with a day at work and just runs home and screams the N-word as loud as he can, as long as he can, just to get it all out? Because that's what he wants to call Barack Obama. You can tell it. You know, he doesn't love America. Don't you think?
Yeah, and I want to thank you for playing that and playing little snippets you do of the right-wing fetishes, because I don't have to go and look for it. I can just catch it on your show, Malloy Show. Throwing in like Dick Hartman and Stephanie Miller. And I want to thank y'all for saving me probably vote for him. I mean, because, I mean, Jesse Ventura, my other two options would be Jesse Ventura. I don't see the senator, the female, what's her name, from Massachusetts.
Senator Warren.
Right. And I just see the only other two viable options are would be Jesse Ventura or Bernie Sanders from Vermont. And unfortunately...
Yeah, but what even remote chance in this or any other universe do those candidates have?
Exactly. I that's the reality.
I mean, you know, Dr. Bill has lately been sounding the alarm about these right wingers who want a constitutional convention, and he does a brilliant job of it. And I know that there are progressives. I've heard. What, maybe Cenk Uygur say, well, yeah, sure, that'd be a great time. You know, we could get rid of Citizens United at a constitutional convention. Wouldn't that be groovy? And I'm thinking, you know, I love you, Cenk, buddy, but, you know, who do you think's going to be at the convention?
Exactly. But
by the same token, hey, you want to get rid of the stupid two-party system? Well, you'll do that at a constitutional convention because you'll completely get rid of the tripartite system of government. You know, maybe we'll have a Supreme Court, and we'll have a parliament instead of a Congress. Maybe we'll still call it a Congress, but it'll be a parliament. And you can have 92 different parties running and coalitions building. We'll have a prime minister instead of a president. And blah, 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 blah. Well, I mean, that's how you do that. But until such time as that occurs, it's first past the post. It's a two-party system. And you're going to wind up with a right-wing candidate for imperial administrator and a center-right candidate for imperial administrator. And neither of those people are Bernie Sanders.
I know.
Let me just finish the job and piss everybody off. The progressive movement in this country could not elect a goddamn dog catcher, let alone a president.
Exactly. That's another thing that pisses me off. And it's just... And I understand it, too. I think I understand it. People are too busy trying to make a living, and that goes back to Ronnie Reagan. And, you know, and even before him, they saw what happened in the 60s when people had time and a little bit of money to try and explore other avenues, so to speak, and just and he put a stop to that real quick with the free education, and we talked about that last time I talked. Was it Friday? You got to hand it to Republicans; they're not stupid. They learned a lot quicker than it seems Democrats do. They, you know, and they. Their efficiency is so much more, and then the Democrats already have taken over, if not three quarters. You know, that's what depresses me. It depresses me or doesn't make me happy. And then one of the things I love about your show is your historical knowledge. But it seems like for the vast part of this country, it's been that way. You had a couple of brief jumping moments, you know, Abraham Lincoln. I'm going to go with JFK and FDR. Other than that, it's pretty bleak. Am I overgeneralizing?
No, I think what you're identifying, Jim, is the fact that, and this is something else that I've said over the course of the years, the way the American system of government is set up is that it is designed not to accomplish much of anything apart from maintaining the status quo. When the United States government has to accomplish something, really, really has to accomplish something, you've got to have something approaching a small minor miracle take place. Excuse me. At least a minor political miracle, because you've got to have all branches of government manifesting almost identical political will within the same sphere of time. And so the times when that occur, or the times when that have occurred in this country, are pretty damn rare. The examples that I've cited in the past, for instance, are Lincoln's administration, when the recalcitrant elitist Southern contingent was gone, and big things happened, including but not limited to the Morrill Act, which led to land-grant universities and increased access to education for working people. And of course the 13th and 14th Amendments. Those could not have happened with the Southern contingent there. Then you get and it's only about 2-3 years long. Then you get you get FDR, and you know that's a couple of years long. For as long as he served, the time that when the Congress really, really accomplished an agenda was relatively brief. You've got a period of time when Teddy Roosevelt is president, and it too is very brief. So the periods of time in which we can really respond and go forward are narrow spaces, and they tend to be very, very spaced, broadly spaced in overall time. And we haven't had one of those grand accomplishment moments since, say, the end of the Johnson administration, because the Great Society was another one of those moments. And the Republicans have worked hammer and tongs to disassemble that from the Civil Rights Act, Medicare, the Voting Rights Act. All of those things happen in a very narrow time frame, and we have not had another one of those time frames since.
Okay, and not only that, I mean, with the 24-hour news cycle, and they're always looking, I mean, you'll find some negative things about people, disability, Social Security, blah, 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 and that seems to make a big deal. But for the grant, from what I understand, it's like 97% of people who are on Social Security disability don't, it's a welfare queens like your hero and mine, Ronald Reagan, just bogusly, fictitiously pulled out, and the American people went for it, hook, line, and sinker. Just like any time this goddamn country gets a chance to go to some stupid ass war, the people don't think that that's going to be their kids, their friends, or their friends' kids who are going to go over there, and some of them are going to get killed, and even worse to some extent, badly effed up. I don't know. To me, that's just blatantly obvious, but it just seems like the American people just don't seem to give that a second thought. It's just like, rah, 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 you know. You know, remember those bomb, 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 Iran, and that was your Arizona senator.
Oh, yeah, Bomber, and, yeah, Bomber John McCain.
Yeah, Mr. Chicken Hawk himself after, well, actually did serve, but.
Yeah, he just couldn't fly planes worth of them.
Well, yeah, it just was a secret. I'm working on a book about how he was really working for the Vietnamese when he ran the plane. I just made up that joke. But the only thing he kind of did is kind of use it as a comedy background. But that's the only way I can kind of deal with it sometimes. That's just me. I mean, because it's just so sickening and irritating, like I told you a while back, you know, like it was a family thing. It was like 10 or 11 adults, and just me and my youngest brother were the only ones, because my sister said something to the effect, well, who are we going to get for president in 16? And that sounded like it was like basically a Republican call to arms, and I'm just like, sweet Virginia, what, you know? Yeah, you're the one with a 12-year-old kid, you know, 13, 14, whatever old it is, you know. And if things get economic, and she's in a good her and her husband are in a good financial situation, things can change. They could open up another draft, although I doubt they'll ever do that, because they've got
You mean the poverty draft?
Yeah, yeah. Didn't Jesus write something about that in the Bible?
Well, that, we don't know that Jesus could write anything at all, but yeah, kind of. But again, the youth of this country have no need to worry about our military misadventures because they don't have to go if they don't want to go. And that's not to cast aspersions on the youth of this era because when you and I were the same age, I suspect, Jim, it was the same thing with us. We didn't have to go if we didn't want to go. I had to register for a draft, but I never had to face one. It wasn't some humane policy decision that eliminated the draft after Vietnam. It was a very savvy government looking up and going, you know, listen, it does not help to have all those people out in the streets saying, hell no, we won't go. If we've just got us a volunteer military, there'll always be a few people that are willing to sign up, and well, gosh, we'll tell them, we'll give them jobs training, and we'll treat it like it's some sort of, vocational undertaking, and not the bloody business of war. And you know, look, then we can go and have wars wherever we want to, and the kids will stay out of the street.
Yeah, well, see, the other thing
they play a long game.
Oh. That I think I tried to point that out, where the Republicans are playing a long game, the Democrats don't quite get it or don't care, or maybe they're in on it too. Yeah, there I go, getting conspiratorial. Oh, sorry.
I don't think that's conspiratorial. I mean, or else maybe I am too. I don't know, Jim. I don't know. Hey, are the azaleas blooming down there?
Is what?
Are the azaleas blooming down there?
No, because what happened, it's interesting you should mention that, because I was talking with my mother the other day, and she was kind of bemoaning the fact a lot, because we had, and this might have something to do with climate change, although you and I know that that's just a...
Yeah, that's a giant hoax.
Left-wing conspiracy. But because we had about, usually down here you get about, two, three freezes, maybe about six or seven. And granted, it wasn't like long freezes. You know what I mean?
It doesn't take a long freeze, just enough to screw things up.
I just
remember growing up down south and how, by late March, you know, down along the Gulf Coast, the whole area just turns pink with azaleas, and it's freaking beautiful. Yeah.
No, like I said, my mother was just, I guess the freezes kind of had something to do with it. Yeah, they probably did. Yeah, and I told you, I planted some blueberry plants, but I waited till after the freezes. So far, so good. Got a couple of tomato plants here and there going, and
oh, goody! Yeah, you'll have fresh tomatoes long before a lot of us will. I was corresponding with News Ninja Carol Baker about, you know, it's spring, and in spring a hillbilly's fancy turns to thought of maters and BLTs. You know, Benton's bacon, some good tomatoes. Some fresh garden leaf lettuce and maybe some really kick-ass sourdough bread. Oh!
Bacon, right. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I got to get some of that.
Ain't nothing like it.
What's it take? What, about a week or two?
If their production's running good, they'll be able to get it to you in a week.
Okay.
So maybe when the tomatoes look like they're getting ready to come ripe, about 2 weeks before then. And then you can just stick it in the fridge because it's vacuum sealed. It'll keep. You don't even have to freeze it.
Sounds like a plan. All right, I'm going to let you go. Let somebody else get on.
All right, sounds good, Jim. You have yourself a good evening.
All right.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana Stan. Both lines open. The Gizmo line, otherwise known as Maud now, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. And Harold, the Skype line, is open as well, 304-574-8178. Note coming in from Gerald. Okay, shut it with the fresh tomato porn, Bob. I haven't had a good tomato since Labor Day. None of us have, Gerald. But it's about that time, and I'm beginning to get the tomato Jones, and it's a long way to July. By the way, note coming in from Michael in Madison regarding Bernie Sanders' presidential candidacies and such. I've said it before, I'll say it again. If Bernie runs, he'll run as a Democrat. He's hinted at this strongly. It'd be a Kucinich type of run, for whatever that may be worth. Get in some debates, raise some issues. He's promised specifically that he won't run a spoiler campaign a la Nader. I take that to mean he won't run as an independent. If he goes back on that and launches an independent candidacy, I'll consider his word worth shit and goodbye Bernie. I wish he'd just announce one way or another so people would stop thinking he's going to run as an independent. I got no problem with Bernie if he runs as a Democrat. And hasn't he also indicated that he's not particularly interested in, he's not going to run for Senate again? Isn't that the case? So go ahead, switch parties, become a Democrat, and run in the primary system, and shift the debate. But I really wish our side would stop with all the, because it's becoming kind of stalky, the way our side's behaving about Elizabeth Warren. The woman said she ain't going to run. If she does run, that makes her a liar, and what kind of character is that? You see my point? Yeah. Okay, what else? What else? What else? It's about 24 minutes before the hour, and well, we've got several options on the table here. Hey, look, it's Andrea Tarantula. The memo must have come down from Rupert of Murdoch that Andrea is to be the next rising star of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. You may recall that she recently said she was going to get in trouble with the feminists, tarred and feathered, I think was the phrase she used, or maybe it was hate mail or something, for suggesting that it's the fault of those drunk girls at fraternity parties. It's their fault when nasty fraternity boys take naked pictures of them. She's back. This time it has to do with the declaration by the Charlottesville, Virginia PD, that they can't find any evidence to support the great big giant oh my god rape story that was published in Rolling Stone magazine. Enter. Now I don't know if Epaminondas Hammersmith is on this panel or not, but Andrea Tarantula sure is. Let's check in, shall we? Oh, here we go with the. Why does this? What's with the auto mute? Oh, by the way. Little update. Update to the future upgrade to the Horn Studio. I now have the necessary software on the MacBook Pro to actually run the stream. It was recommended to me by Ben Birch. That means it will work. And so that's one more step closer. We've been drawing off plans for a kind of revamped, reorganized studio, and it is coming along, and the more I think about it, as horrifying as I find the concept, I think depending on how the bandwidth holds up, why not turn this into a video thing? I think we'll investigate that over the course of the reboot of the studio. Anyway, the outnumbered is the name of this silly program. But shall we?
Trudy is now saying that they've been vindicated, that all of the facts have been laid out on the table in terms of the accusations that were made. The fraternity is also saying this does a huge disservice to victims of sexual assault. Again, the chief of police said this doesn't mean that something horrible didn't happen to Jackie, but it certainly didn't happen at that fraternity party, Harris.
Yeah, I want an investigation into what Rolling Stone was thinking. I don't know that an apology really does it. I know that they have the college, the university looking into how they do their processing for how they vet the people they talk to. But we know from our own reporting here on the couch that they let a reporter determine that she just wasn't going to track any further than the website.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she just wasn't going to do the complete job that we learned in Journalism 101.
Right.
You know, so I don't, this obviously for the victim.
Now, you're going to have to go a long way to convince me that anybody at Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, ever had Journalism 101. And I don't know if Dr. John's out there, but he's probably kicking furniture at the very thought. Any of us doing journalism here on the couch, what the does that mean anyway?
This is huge. But also for journalism. Mm-hmm. I mean, I take it personally.
Yeah.
They didn't just get it
Absolutely.
Wrong. It was egregious.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Was it as egregiously wrong as Fox News TV Radio Rwanda has been while it was banging the Benghazi drum for the year and a half? Was it that egregious? I don't know.
Wrong they were.
Well, Andrea, the reporter admitted that when she went to, she admitted that she had been visiting college campuses looking for a story. And so that plays into the narrative about campus rape, what is, you know, perpetuated on college campuses, are feminist groups on campus wanting reporters to write things like that and giving them stories that maybe aren't true. All the questions come up now as a result of this investigation not turning up anything that corroborates her account.
Yeah, this is the most dangerous form of journalism, as you point out, Howard.
Really? And this, of course, is Andrea Tarantula. Let's back up. I want to make sure we get this. This is the most dangerous form of journalism? Well, if you accept as given that nothing that happens on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is actually journalism, then maybe there's a compelling argument to be made in favor of Andrea Tarantula's statement. But if you include as somehow within the bounds of journalism anything that happens at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, then I would have to say that the most dangerous form of journalism has to be when a multimillionaire babbling boob, who shall go nameless except to say Bill O'Reilly, goes on the air night after night hollering about Tiller the Killer, Tiller the Killer, Tiller the Killer, until somebody assassinates Dr. Tiller. That's a pretty dangerous form of journalism. Or maybe it's Bernie Goldberg and O'Reilly and Hannity hooting and hollering about the liberals until a virulently radicalized, out-of-work redneck named Adkins grabs the family shotgun and goes to hunt him some liberals down to the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation and shoots up a few people. That's a pretty dangerous... But then again, yes, the compelling argument from the other side made by Gerald. What would anyone at Fox News know anything about journalism? Bingo!
Investigation not turning up anything that corroborates her account.
Yeah, this is the most dangerous form of journalism, as you point out, Harris, because they're just looking for stories, and if they don't get them, then they'll just make it up. Or they'll use hyperbolic explanations that they don't validate and put them in and have them masquerading as journalism. But there's a bigger theme happening here, Katie. I mean, as you point out, this hurts women. This hurts victims of sexual assault. And I'm going to speak slowly here, so all the
Oh, wait. Here's the fun part. Get the hockey puck.
Journalism. But there's a bigger theme happening here, Katie. I mean, as you point out, this hurts women. This hurts victims of sexual assault. And I'm going to speak slowly here so all the feminist blogs can get this one because I'm sure they'll clip it. There is a war happening on boys on these college campuses. Now, we see this fraternity. They can't show that they did anything wrong. We don't know if anything was done wrong. But, Katie, The DOJ has been involved, and Obama's administration is scrutinizing these college campuses to come down hard on cases of rape. And even at Harvard University, some of the most liberal professors, including Alan Dershowitz, have penned a letter to the Boston Globe saying there is no due process right. in these sexual misconduct cases for these kids. Mm-hmm. Okay? This is a real problem. They say that...
Wait, Andrea Tarantula. Wait. Are you saying that the DOJ... which Eric Holder runs, you say, like the Black Panthers, has done something you agree with?
I fully expect that by next week she'll be showing up on camera with her big old Angela Davis natural. Nah. Did you catch that? There's a war on boys. Does everything have to be a war? Well, at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda it does, but there's a war on boys. Not young men. Not men. Boys. Yeah, I don't know. Boys?
There's no opportunity to discover the facts. There's no opportunity to confront witnesses and present a defense. This also hurts lower-income students yeah. because they can't retain right. legal representation.
They can't fight back.
Yeah. They cannot fight back. And so you have Lena Dunham, Rolling Stone. It is a theme in this country to go after boys in this rape culture.
On campus.
Now, there are absolutely mm-hmm. legitimate reasons for them to do this. But what happens after they assassinate their character? What happens to Lena Dunham?
Nothing.
What happens to these fraternity boys? Absolutely nothing. And it hurts the women and the victims at the end of the day.
Does any of this even make sense? She's saying there's a war on boys, but what happens to these boys at the end of the day? Nothing. Did I get that right?
Some of the most liberal professors, including Alan...
Oh, shut up. Including Alan Dershowitz, the liberal professor.
Whoa!
For these kids. Mm-hmm. Okay? This is a real problem. They say that there's no opportunity to discover the facts. There's no opportunity to confront witnesses and present a defense. This also hurts lower income students yeah. because they can't retain
right.
legal representation.
They can't fight back. Yeah.
They cannot fight back. And so you have Lena Dunham, Rolling Stone. It is a theme in this country to go after boys in this rape culture.
On campus.
It is a theme to go after boys in this rape culture. Who else do you go after when somebody's been raped? Well, it's a fair cop, but society's to the blame. Quit mugging the camera. Please, tell me. Tell me that as I age, if I age, tell me that if I get to be a septuagenarian, something's not going to happen to my brain between now and then, and I'm going to find myself nodding at the TV while an aging Andrea Tarantula continues to babble at me. Yeah, see, that's what I was thinking. News Ninja Carol Baker noting, I'm a feminist. Well, I am too, Carol. So I need you to play that. Isn't there a little misandry going on over in Andrea Tarantula's world? Because I guess only women are allowed. Because see, I'm a feminist. Carol says I'm a feminist, so I need you to play this back at half speed as I ponder how these boys have been infantilized as a means of giving them a pass. They're fucking men. And see, that was the next thing. Infantilization. Oh, they're just boys. Boys will be boys. Yeah, I'm going to say this slowly for the feminists. Andrea, you've got that job because of feminists. You're not living in some cold water walk up in Newark. Pregnant with your eighth kid because of feminists.
when women took to the streets for some semblance of co-equal rights with men, which they still have not achieved. The thing about that struggle is that it was a struggle for all women, even the really, really ungrateful, nasty ones like you, Andrea Tarantula.
Discover the facts. There's no opportunity to confront witnesses and present a defense. This also hurts lower income students because they can't retain legal representation. They cannot fight back. And so you have Lena Dunham, Rolling Stone. It is a theme in this country to go after boys in this rape culture.
On campus.
Now, there are absolutely legitimate reasons for them to do this. But what happens after they assassinate their character? What happens to Lena Dunham?
Nothing.
What happens to these fraternity boys? Absolutely.
What, Lena Dunham, what? I mean, is Lena Dunham on that couch there? No. When did, you know, say what you will about her program. I'm not that familiar with it, her show. But a very dear friend of mine with whom I once attended Harvard on the Mon, and who is now a very successful properties professional in the film industry, told me at one point in time that Lena Dunham was an absolute hurricane of work, and that the program that she, the show that she does, what is it called, Girls? I don't remember. Was almost entirely done out of her own labor, harder work than most of us will ever do. But I guess Lena Dunham is not deserving of any respect from Andrea Tarantula, because Rolling Stone got a story wrong? What, Edith, huh?
Absolutely nothing, and it hurts the women.
What does she want to happen to Lena Dunham? I'm still trying to figure that out. Nothing's going to happen to Lena Dunham. Well, listen, Andrea, what happens to you when you get on screen and assault a generation's worth of work toward equality? What happens to you? And I'm trying to be feminist in this and not screw up and say, call her honey or baby or darling or any of those things that we do here in Appalachia, because I really am trying to walk the walk here. I don't understand. Does she want Lena Dunham to be flogged naked in the streets? Does she want Lena Dunham to be raped at a fraternity party? What? Sued within an inch of her life? Taken off of the air? What? Maybe I missed something. News Ninja Carol noting, I didn't fart. My ass loves Andrea Tarantula so much it just blew her a kiss. God, I need a laugh once in a while. I do.
And the victims at the end of the day, the most.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to obviously keep looking at that, and we hope that in the future, Rolling Stone does more vetting, because there are people's reputations at stake, and men also have some rights when it comes to his reputations not being ruined over non-factual reporting.
You know, okay. I'm not going to go nasty on this, because see, if I did that, I might find myself suddenly being in the same camp with the duck doofus, Phil Robertson. You know, the guy who's made $1 million or so or more making little things that make ducks think that Phil wants to have sex with them. Free enterprise. Duck doofus went to a Vero Beach prayer breakfast. And Rick Wiles, whom you heard on the Green News Report, saying that the drought was brought on by homosexuals. Yeah, same guy. Well, they invited Duck Doofus to speak. And I don't, I could have saved this for tomorrow evening, but we got a special conversation coming up, and we may not get into the religious weirdness as much as we usually do on a Wednesday. So we'll do this to round out the program. This is Duck Doofus, Phil Robertson, giving us a view into the weird, creepy, mold and mildew-filled, spidery, webby, sticky, nasty, dark, spooky place that is his id.
Maybe if you just buy enough health care insurance, that'll keep you out of the ground. I don't think so. Save you money. You got a 6-foot hole waiting on you if you have all the health care you can buy. You say, is it going to keep me out of the ground? No, sir. It's a problem. And you know something? You can't solve it.
So, just a quick question. Do you reckon Duck Doofus is intentionally this stupid or negligently? Because it's not, nobody's saying that health care will make you immortal, that access to health care will make you immortal. The challenge here has been to try to eliminate the unnecessary premature statistical deaths that come from not having access to health care. And by the way, can we ask, do you reckon Duck Doofus, given his age, you reckon Duck Doofus has some health care? I'm just wondering.
Just like you can't see in your sin problem. Oh, I don't know, this conscience thing. I mean, we just dreamed it up. There's no right. There's no wrong. There's no good. There's no evil. I'll make a bet with you.
Yeah?
Two guys break into an atheist home. He has...
Is this the beginning of a joke? Two ducks walk into a bar? No. And then I shot them! Because they're ducks! No. This is the weird id-driven revenge fantasy that occurs in the Christian mind of Duck Doofus.
Two guys break into an atheist home. He has a little atheist wife and two little atheist daughters. Two guys break into his home and tie him up in a chair and gag him. And then they take his two daughters in front of him and rape both of them and then shoot them. And they take his wife and decapitate her head off in front of him. And then they can look at him and say, isn't it great that I'd have to worry about being judged? Isn't it great that there's nothing wrong with this? There's no right or wrong. Now, is it, dude? And then you take a sharp knife and take his manhood and hold it in front of him and say, wouldn't it be something if this was something wrong with this? But you're the one that says there's no God, there's no right, there's no wrong.
This is one evil son of a bitch. There's not an atheist I know of who says that there is no such thing as right or wrong. This is the Christian id declaring that only Christianity can define right and wrong. But this sick bastard, this sick millionaire bastard, sits around fantasizing about the rape and murder of little girls and the decapitation of little atheist wives. You know what he is? He's a ready-made Ted Cruz voter. How long do you think it'll be before Duck Doofus is on the same stump with Ted Theodore Cruz, anointed future King of America, son of Raphael? And you know what? Here's the statistical fun part. If he's talking that way, there's millions of evangelical fundamentalist Christians thinking that way.
Time to get out of here. Oh, what a happy note we're ending on. No, we are ending on a happy note. Thank you to Darlene. And thank you to Dan. And thank you very kindly to Thomas and to Glenn and to Henry, all of whom matched John in Colorado's challenge for this evening, making it possible that we can be all paid up for the first time in a very long time. Thank you very kindly, one and all. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.